am I talking to?
You are talking to Stefan Klein.
And?
Christopher Daniel.
Oh, at?
At Paladin Engineering.
Paladin Engineering. And you guys are doing a wonderful job here with a fully machined front triangle.
That's right.
It's quite a project. And you were just saying about brake geometry. Let me get it.
Well, we owe all of that to Peter Verdun.
Oh, cool.
Of course.
What was it? What problem were you solving and what was...
We didn't know exactly what shape to make it, and we used your guide for all the dimensions for, like, the post mount.
Wow, okay. And why did you not use SRAM's definition?
I think we actually found SRAM's definition after that.
Okay, so you found mine first.
That's right.
Okay, but then did you use my numbers or SRAM's numbers in the end?
I thought they were pretty similar for this size.
They are. SRAM and mine are close. It's Shimano that's wackadoodle.
Oh, gotcha.
Shimano's all over the place. that's cool, but it's a huge project. I mean,
it is.
I know that several other people are doing this kind of project right now.
Yeah.
And of course, they tried clamshells, and I guess you guys are trying I-beams.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah. Well, we're doing kind of like a combo of things. This is like a new approach that we invented and like patented about a year ago.
What is the patent?
It's basically for the front triangle construction. So it's like that we don't split all of the interfaces, and then we have like this long tube section that connects like the two most important sections. So the head tube is not split at all.
Right.
The C tube is not split at all. All the pivots, all the BB, those are all solid. And then we hollow out the down tube.
Yep.
This is like a partially machined one.
Okay.
And then we put a groove in the side right here.
Oh, and to cover it.
Well, yeah, it creates like a double lap shear joint.
Okay.
So that when you install the down tube cover, this part becomes really strong and torsionally stiff.
Oh, cool.
So basically, you could huck this thing off of like a huge jump in a straight line without the cover on and it would hold. But then like putting the cover on adds like a ton of, you know, torsional,
like it'll just
torsional
never
stiffness.
Break,
yeah, torsional and, stiffness.
And straight. Also because of your largely a single piece here of homogeneous material,
yeah,
your FEA is pretty on point.
Exactly.
Right.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. So we put a lot of effort into that. Into like, you know, making sure that we were going to pass EFBE's test with flying colors. So we're going to be sending
EFBE
out a frame.
EFBE is a European standard of some sort.
Yeah,
it's not ISO.
They do the ISO test, but then they have their own test that kind of exceeds those standards.
So that you can use it in a... it can be applicable in a consumer riding down a World Cup course.
Exactly.
Okay, yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, like, that's what we designed around. We're, basically trying to, like, exceed that test with flying colors and then make it as light as possible while we're doing it.
How does it work out in weight in terms of, like, what would you compare it to that maybe might be identifiable?
I think it's kind of in between, like, a high-end lightweight carbon bike and a high-end, like, welded aluminum frame.
Wow.
A little bit closer to carbon, I would say.
Sure, that's pretty cool.
And it's because it's 7075.
Okay.
So it's like an alloy that you can't weld, and so that's, you know, why we're machining it in
sure.
the first place,
yeah.
so that you have access to that. And, like, the fatigue strength of 7075 is, like, twice as high as 6061.
Right, it's the real deal.
And fatigue strength, you know, if the strength is twice as high, it might last, like, 10 or 100 times as long at the same stress level.
Sure, it's really cool. I mean, I totally appreciate that it is one part, and that I mean, while not every datum or reference point is done in the same setup,
yeah.
I'm sure you're within a few tenths.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably very precise for the bicycle world.
Well, how's this? If you're using the word precise, it's already more precise than the bicycle world.
Yeah, over here.
Okay,
we got,
let's
like,
go over here.
You can kind of see like how, you know, the journey of the bike. So
uh-huh.
We buy like these. We have a supplier here that we like send a pattern to get water jetted, and so we get to like nest a few parts together.
Mm-hmm.
So like the rocker link comes out of this section
right.
on a full size
sure.
bike, and then this is like basically how we do the first operation on the machining. That water jetted block is like clamped to the fixture, and you could do this whole side. And this is actually oriented so you can do the head tube as well.
Right. And is everything you're doing 5-axis?
It's actually 4-axis.
Okay.
So we have this huge trunnion table, this
okay.
like big kind of rotisserie style.
And a full-size three-axis machine.
Exactly.
Like a really, really big one.
In this case, we basically picked the smallest one we could get away with and still have it be big enough.
Okay, cool.
We self-funded everything. Everything is bootstrapped.
Okay, and you bought your machines and planned this out right from the ground up. Wild. Where are you guys located?
We're a mile away from here in Portland.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
wow.
Over in the Brooklyn neighborhood.
And do you have other industries you're trying to serve?
Yeah, so like we kind of built up, well, actually we started the bike company first.
Okay.
But then, you know, we got to keep the lights on too. So,
sure.
So we kind of built up a engineering firm as well on top of that.
Great.
So most of us are out of like the robotics and machine design world.
Uh-huh.
And so we build, yeah, custom robots.
You can do all the cool
machines,
stuff.
And,
well, that's cool. I mean, the real way to approach all this stuff is you get yourself a good business that's making good money, and then you get to have all kinds of fun with bikes.
Exactly.
Not the other way around. but it's gorgeous stuff. What, let's say from a bicycle point of view, is your goal? What are you trying to accomplish? This is a single model. Maybe you have a few different sizes,
mm-hmm.
but like, what is the, say, goal of this bike?
I think right now we just want to get one thing on the market, see how people like it.
But like, I mean, as a bicycle, not marketing, not sales.
Oh,
I see. Like, what is it? What's the job of this bike?
This is an all-mountain like machine that you can kind of take anywhere. So it's 160 in the front, 150 as we have it configured right now. You can go up to 170 fork. We've like rated it for that. And it's like, it's honestly built for like the riding you do around Oregon and the Pacific Northwest. It's just like a
cool PNW, and
yeah,
like you
exactly.
ride Whistler, have a great time.
Totally, yeah, you could totally take it for
dual
a day.
Crowns.
In Whistler. Dual crowns, we haven't rated it for.
Okay.
You know, a 170 dual crown would be kind of short anyway, but it's like, but you could definitely do a day in Whistler.
Now, and, as you have it, it looks fairly defined in terms of what the configuration is. Are you working toward maybe a more adjustable system that you could make it your 100 millimeter travel bike one day and maybe a 170 the next with just a few parts changes? Or is it, this is the machine, that's it, buy a different bike?
It's pretty much like the this is the machine thing. One of the problems is if you did that, like this thing is built around like the category 4 like enduro testing at EFBE. So like if you made a 100 mil bike out of it would just be way too heavy.
Well, way too heavy unless you're racing dual slalom.
Yeah, that's true.
And then it's probably sick.
You could probably short stroke it and race some dual slalom on it. It'd be sweet.
It just wouldn't be a good bike if you just short stroke it, right? Because you know there's more to it than that, obviously.
We could put some small wheels on it and make it work out.
But it's very cool, and I really like, yeah, I really like the non-clamshell thing.
Yeah.
In terms of user friendliness and soft touching, like you have this, you know, the edging up here, and I know that corners are really big in design these days, but even with a cornered tube, it's fairly soft.
Mm.
But here it's like when you're banging your body against this thing, it's got some edge to it.
I've been riding it for like over a year now, and I don't have too many bruises on the inside of my knees.
They're all good.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not the actual geometry that your like leg contacts here is not particularly sharp.
Okay.
So we haven't had any like actual issues with it. There's like a couple spots that we've like kind of optimized. Like we gave a little bit more clearance to the cranks because I was like noticing like a little bit of like heel rub in a certain spot, and like your foot could get like a little, your shoe could maybe get caught a little bit.
Uh-huh.
So like that stuff is like deeper, bigger chamfers, more clearance, and so we've like fixed a lot of those like little issues.
Is there something you're hoping to accomplish, say on next revision, or things that like are fascinating in terms of directions you want to go?
Yeah, well, I mean, the first thing is like, so this was just our first prototype, right?
Right.
And we basically...
So you've built one bike, or this is... You have several bikes?
We are building the second bike right now.
Okay.
Right. And, like, the second one is kind of, like, with the full, like, production intent. So we, like, put in all of our learnings from the first bike. Actually completely redid the CAD model in a much more stable way in Creo, which is, just like our kind of gadget.
I know how that works. I'm continually making a whole new model for parts that I've modeled a million times.
Yeah, and hopefully it's better every time.
Right.
And in
right.
this case, it's way better every time because Creo is like way more stable with all the surfacing that we do. Like we, all of this is built off of like surface geometry. So that stuff is just rock solid in that
right.
program.
Sure.
And yeah, we're going to offer...
I'm
like,
just a SolidWorks guy. Surfaces, I try my best, but you know.
Yeah, that's fair. It's a lot of work. We're going to have four sizes, so like small through XL. It's like 425 to 500 mil reach. And then one of the cool things about this design that is kind of modular is the rear center length. So the seat stays, we like came up with a cool like fixture design method so that we can increment those really well. And so you can do like 4 millimeter increments on chainstay length and do MX or 29, depending on what you want.
And your kinematics remain within what your design goals are.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we had to like kind of design for both situations.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And this, I mean, speaking of the suspension design, it's pretty unique, right? Like, I mean,
it's an FSR.
It's kind of like an FSR, but the chainstay goes over the chain.
Right.
On the other side?
Yeah, one piece.
So, do you remember Mountain ETSX?
Sure. No, I understand it relates to that, but effectively. Effectively, it's the same layout as an FSR.
It's also a 4-bar, yeah. It's very similar.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is, like, you see how high the main pivot is over the chainring?
Sure.
But it's not an idler-equipped bike.
Right.
And the way that works is that the instant center is actually, like, way over there. It's like, these parts are so long, the rocker link's so long, and it results in a super low anti-rise.
Uh-huh.
And there's just, like, a really interesting local optimum there where, like, the location of the instant center interacts with, like, the chain line, and your anti-squat in that pedaling band stays, like, remarkably consistent at, like, around 100%.
Okay.
From, like, 25% sag to 50% sag. And then it kind of diverges a little bit after that. But, like, in all of your gears, across that sag range, it's, like, stays between, like, 110 and 95.
So you're solving the problem with long arms.
Yeah. pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. I just wrote a bit about anti-squat on my blog. What are the costs for a chassis here? Like, what are we looking at?
Yeah, for the frame, I think we're targeting in like the low like 5,000 range.
5,000 for frame.
Yeah.
And it's I would assume looking at it, assuming it's of a similar type thing, that it's probably got a it's never gonna break.
No, this thing should last.
Yeah, like it looks like it's solid, but it's all hollowed out too, which makes it can be deceiving that way.
Yeah.
What was I gonna say?
Have you seen the rocker link yet?
The rocker link. Let's look at it.
It's got it in his hand.
Yeah. Oh. Okay.
Cool, huh?
Right. It looks like it weighs 3 pounds. It feels like it weighs about an ounce. That's gorgeous. It feels good, too. It feels almost plasticky.
Yeah, so that's an interesting one, because like we really wanted it to be this like raw machined aesthetic.
Uh-huh.
And we also kind of wanted to avoid anodization, because 7075A, well, it doesn't really like to be like clear anodized. It'll change like funky colors. And it also embrittles the surface a little bit, so it takes away from that fatigue strength. So we did a chromate conversion, and now we're applying like a clear coat that is, that's what you're feeling with your mm-hmm. when you're touching it. A clear coat that's like designed for like machined aluminum wheels.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what we're going for.
Really? Okay,
it turned
that's
out
interesting.
Pretty amazing, I thought.
Okay, so it's like, it's going to look like my old Honda CB750 wheels in a couple years. that's fun. Very cool. I mean, it's gorgeously machined. The modeling is obviously really nice.
Thank you.
I do love it. It's cool stuff. I'm jealous of your work. I think it looks wonderful. I'm not so much a fully machined chassis solution guy.
I think you're
a traditionalist of sorts,
right?
Oh, no.
In construction, though, right?
No.
Are you a custom frame builder? Like a classic?
I make cool stuff.
Yeah.
But, bro, I would love to be working with welded aluminum structure. Okay. That would be my goal.
Okay.
It's just welded aluminum is, let's say, hard.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah,
so yeah. I'm not doing that.
Gotcha.
No, I would love to work with aluminum, carbon. That's it.
Yeah.
I work with steel. Why? Because it's easy.
Yeah.
I have other problems I'm trying to solve.
Gotcha. It's not based on the principle of things. You know, you just
Yeah, I'm just being expeditious, right?
Makes
but
sense.
I mean, I think nobody would call me a traditionalist.
How's gotcha.
That? But no, I just view. I don't know. It's we're getting to this point with glue, that's pretty cool, and we're seeing a lot of lugged yeah. aluminum bikes
yeah.
that are just aluminum glued to aluminum, which I think is great. I don't know the particulars of the engineering of that joint mm-hmm. with regard to that, but obviously carbon and aluminum and everything like that. But it's all great stuff, and I think the big thing here is obviously as a person who's actually done kinematic calculations and modeled out kinematic systems for all this stuff, knowing what can happen in certain systems when something moves just slightly,
mm-hmm.
what yeah. it results in.
Seriously.
And the fact that you folks, when you're making this, will have just, let's say, precision, as you said earlier.
Yeah.
It's like your pivots and your points are those.
That's right.
Versus most people that are making full suspension bikes. Yeah, I mean, my whole point of my frame fixture was to be able to define points correctly rather than guessing.
Yeah.
Because you can't if you're doing a kinematic system. But this is the next level. I mean, it's obviously great. Man, I'd love to ride one of these at Whistler with a dual crown. But I'm so old now, it doesn't even matter. I'm so lame. Don't get old, you'll get lame.
I'll try.
They say, the best advice ever, live fast, die young.
Perfect.
Okay, I'm going to let you go. It's great stuff. I'm going to take a few pictures.
Cool, sounds
Thanks
great.
For talking
great
to
chatting
me.
With you.
All right.